The Navigators is an international, interdenominational Christian organization whose objective is to help fulfill Christ's commission to make disciples of all nations. They individually teach the basics of the Christian life to new believers, who then teach others. They work on campuses, military bases, and among lay men and women on every continent.
I want to begin today with a couple pontifical pronouncements. Three of them, to be exact. And I want you to filter these through your own mental grid. Fact number one. There is no one, underline that, no one. It includes you. Without significant creative potential. There's nothing more convincingly proven, both by research and in the laboratory of light. But frequently, creativity is buried under layers of conditioning by significant persons. The two greatest culprits are, one, teachers. In my introductory course on Bible study methods at the seminary, I have a session in which I ask the men to come up with some form of paraphrase of Acts chapter 3, first 10 verses. It can be musical, it can be drama, it can be poetry, you name it. And it's fascinating to watch this process. A call for volunteers. I've learned the hard way. To watch for the guy who raises his hand like this. His confidence level is so low, he's never up there, hoping you won't see him. And I just happened to be sweeping around one day, and I said, "Yeah, man, you. Me, pa? You. You're on." You know, and the old guy comes up, and he reads a free verse poem, which we have since had published in half a dozen leading magazines. One of the best pieces of creative poetry I've ever read. When a guy got through, the response was so spontaneous, it just broke out into thunderous applause. And the kid's eyes filled with tears. And he melted back into the classroom. And I said to him, "Is that the first time you've ever done this?" Well, he said, "Not really. But it's the first time I've ever had the courage to share it." And after the class, he came up and I said, "Do me a favor. What turned off your creative juices?" He said, "A fifth grade teacher who asked us to engage in a quote-unquote creative project. And I worked like crazy on the thing, all night long. And I came and I was so excited and I shared it with her and she looked at it and said, 'Well, what in the world is that? You know what I think of that?' And she crumpled the whole thing and threw it in the wastebasket beside her desk. And he said, 'That's the last time I ventured to share my creative product.'" You know, my friends, the evangelical community is covered with people who have creative potential coming out their ears. But our teachers are shutting them down. There's a second culprit, greater than the first. That's parents. Boy, I'd love to come into your home. You give me an hour in your home and I'll tell you whether this is a good creative environment. And if you want to know, take one of these tape recorders and just play it. Find out how many times you say, don't do that. No, cut it out. Shut up. See, the kid's 12 before he learns his name is not shut up. I was speaking on my favorite tirade, television. I'm very serious. I get the end product of this. You can believe what they're sending to the seminary these days. Brilliant. For your information, we are running from 7 to 8 points above the national average in medical school and 10 points above law school in GRE exams of students coming. We are getting a cream. But these guys have had every ounce of creativity whipped out of them. And we're trying to train them for later. They've been chowing too much on television. Well, the best antidote for this, by the way, is providing reading material. Television is no substitute for reading. It'll ruin your reading habits. These are the embalmers, the morticians. Fact number two. The conditioning process can be reversed. That's right. We should have a few more amens. It's possible to peel off the layers of conditioning. It's a process that does not take place without a lot of effort, without a high cost factor. And this is why when a student comes to me, as he often does, and says, hey, Prof, I get the picture. I need to become a creative individual. Will you help me? I'll say, yeah, provided you answer one question. How badly do you want to develop this process? You know, are you playing games with me, or do you want to go for broke? Because I don't have 5 minutes to give to somebody who's in an experimental process. I'll give you 500 hours if you want to go for broke. Because that's what it costs. It'll turn you every way but loose. It'll plow your ground. It'll strain your brain. But it's possible to reverse it. Fact number three. This is a very critical one, often lost in my judgment in the literature. Creativity is essentially a lifestyle. It's got to pervade every area of your experience. There is no such thing as saying, I shall now proceed to become creative. Let me give you some specifics that you can latch on to. For example, do you do anything in your house at Christmas by way of decoration? Do you wrap presents? Just ask yourself this question. You ever wrap a present the same way? Never wrap two presents the same way. That's what creativity is about. You express your love to your wife, sexually and otherwise, in the same way? That's the problem. That's what women are climbing the walls over. The guy is so predictable. See, I never express my love to my wife in the same way. Now, you know that, boy, that does something for you. And we could multiply the illustrations. I want to introduce you to a field, and I like to call it the contagion of creativity, or how to blast the blahs. I want to introduce you to a field that bristles with potential. And I can just barely scratch the surface in the amount of time that we've got, but let's scratch it. That's where you're itching. First of all, I want to introduce you to a book. The book is written by Alex Osborne, O-S-B-O-R-N-E, entitled Applied Imagination. It's now available in paperback. I would regard it as one of the 10 greatest books that I have ever read in my life. Alex Osborne is called by most the father of the creativity movement in America. founded the Creative Education Foundation and the State University of New York at Buffalo. The value of this book is not in its essential contents, but in the exercises at the end of each chapter. And you start out by taking a common brick and asking, how could you use it? And you brainstorm. And if a man, a woman, were to take that book, or a couple, or as we have done in our home, a family, and work on those exercises, you will discover the members of your family, your disciples, just going off the graph in a period of time. I want to ask and answer three questions to help give you an intellectual hat rack on which to hang our ideas. First question I want to ask is why? Why be concerned? Why is creativity even an option? What will it do? Second thing I want to do is to answer the question, what? What is involved in the creative process? I'll give you a short summary of a very involved process. And finally, how can you activate your own creativity? Okay, number one, why? The importance of creativity. I'll give you five values. Number one, creativity perpetuates the learning process. That's a deadly peril. The peril of stopping the learning process. See, as long as you live, you learn. As long as you learn, you live. If you stop learning today, you stop living tomorrow. Bothers me no end to see people, particularly people who have a PhD or some impressive degree, you know, who so long ago have stopped learning. What a prostitution of the human brain, of the resources that God gives. Discipleship is essentially a call to perpetual learning. A second value. Creativity is essential to meet the growing demands of a changing society. It's my judgment that packaged thinkers are out of business for an impact tomorrow. Sure. To meet the growing demands of a changing society. And I'd like to paraphrase an adage. It said there are only two things of which we can be sure, taxes and death. I would like to add a third, change. And what concerns me most in the evangelical movement is that we are not preparing our people for change. That's why they're constantly hiding in enclaves. They're threatened people. Now just stop to think of the doctrinal incongruence of that conclusion. My Bible tells me I've been predestined to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. Man, how much change can you expect? And yet many a Christian set in concrete. You see, I'm convinced that not only do we not have the answers, I'm convinced we don't even know what the problems are. And I'm not talking just about today, I'm talking about 5 years from now. And if we do not prepare our disciples to change, they will never be a change element in the next generation. A creative individual is always maladjusted to the status quo, which is well defined by the black as the mess we're in. Third, to infect your communication with a characteristic freshness and vitality, Creativity will infect your communication with a characteristic freshness and vitality. See, we're commanded to communicate truth. Not to bottle it, but to dispense it. And a communicative individual is always a creative individual. There's a direct correlation between the two. He's a provocative individual. He raises questions. He disturbs you. That's why a lot of people don't like a good communicator. They like somebody who reinforces their prejudices. You know, he agrees with me. He's a scholar. You appreciate my Bible study? Well, you're a discerning individual. Fourth, creativity develops your leadership potential. And you know, I like to infect you guys with something, and that's the realization that right now, the greatest need in evangelical Christianity is for top drawer creative leadership. I don't know of a Christian organization, an evangelical church, that can afford to hang a sign out their front door, "No help wanted." Every organization I'm connected with is looking for top drawer leadership to handle the most strategic opportunities ever given to the church. See, no period of church history had the opportunities that we had. We got a leadership crisis. Our problem is an opportunity. Our problem is personnel. Fifth, last of the reasons. Creativity will overhaul your lifestyle. And you see, most of us as Christians don't live. We just exist. We don't enjoy life, we endure it. You ever notice how hard it is to find a person who's just flat intoxicated with life? They run around, you know, constantly running to Christians. "How are you, friend?" "Oh, yeah, I'm pretty good under the circumstances." "What in the world are you doing under there?" "This is where the guy spends the bulk of his life. Look at his face. Good frontispiece to the Book of Lamentations. He looks like he's been weaned on a dill pickle." Guy says, "Oh boy, it's wonderful to be a Christian, isn't it? It's so exciting." You know, my response to that is, "Hey, do us a favor, will you? Don't tell anybody you're a believer." See, Jesus Christ said, "I am come that you might have life." I mean, really live. You living or just existing? See, what a fraud we perpetuate on our pagan society. Never know that we are connected with the source of life itself. We're dead in the head and everywhere else. I'll tell you, there's a little clue that I ran into might be helpful to you. You know why this is? I'll tell you. Because most of us are either living in the past or we're living in the future. We're not enjoying the present. You know where I first learned that? From my unsaved father. How would you like to have a father who woke up like this? You know what his first statement was that I recall? "Hey, son, another day in which to work." Can you imagine that today? You know, they'd carry him off to a nearby, you know, ward. Boys with the white coats come out. Just the sheer delight of work. I was interested in doing some research some years ago. I found a culture where they don't have an expression to tell people to go to hell. Nothing in their language is an equivalent to that. You know what they do? "May you be banished to a life of inactivity the rest of your life." Quote unquote, primitive society. A motto of most of us, let's face it, is, "I came, I saw, I concurred." Now, the second question is what? What are the principles of creativity? Well, let's see if we can boil them down to five or six so you can get a hold of them. All kinds of stuff written in this field.
There's even a journal called the Journal of Creative Behavior, to which I subscribe and which I read, one of the few journals I read from cover to cover. Just sheer delight. Principle number one, creativity is largely a matter of effort. We remember one fact, the mind is like a muscle. It grows with usage. It atrophies when you fail to use it. Some of you know one of my favorite indoor sports is watching surgery. Every time I get an opportunity, I'm in the operating room. Seen the operation the gym's going through 15, 20 times, I'm sure. Incredible. The skills that God has allowed these men to develop. Just incredible. Some time ago, a friend of mine in Philadelphia said, "Hey, Hendricks, I want you to see something you haven't seen." He's a pathologist. He said, "I want you to see an autopsy." Well, I didn't know whether I was up for that. I said, "Let's try it." He said, "We just got a fresh one." Beautiful the way these guys, you know, perceive it all. She just died an hour ago. He knew my interest in surgery and medicine, so he started at the top of her head, went to the bottom of her feet, and just explained the whole thing all the way down. You know, she didn't die here. You know, here it is, that's it, that's where it got her. You know, and I'm falling in the body. I can't tell any different from that and the rest of the stuff, because I don't know what I'm looking for. So we went out, we were washing up. I said, "Let me ask you a question," because I run into this a lot of times. "You've seen a lot of bodies. You've seen a lot of brains." "Yeah," I said, "I've seen a lot of brains." I said, "You ever see one that's been worn out?" He roared. He said, "Hendricks, I have never seen one even slightly used." Isn't that beautiful? He said, "Don't worry about wearing it out. That's not an option." But you see, opportunity comes down the pike and we miss it every time because we expect it to be dressed in a tux and it's dressed in overalls. If I'm going to be a significant impact on my generation, then there are other options. Then you got to make a basic decision. How badly do you want to develop it? Your mind is also like a rubber band. Once you stretch it, it will never return to its original form. So there's a lot of pain. Second, and this is the hardest one to get across to seminary students, it might even be to navigators. I don't know. I haven't tried it on for size that much. Quantity is essential to quality in the creative process. You understand that there are two hemispheres to your brain. It's the right hand and the left hand hemisphere. And most of us only use half a brain. My pathologist friend also informed me. You only use the left side of your brain, which is the part that does all of the cognitive work, the critical work, the figuring out of a set of statistics, et cetera, et cetera. The right side of your brain is the creative side. That's the most unused side. Because you see, these two tend to conflict. They're designed to exist in tension, in imbalance, and to provoke each other. But we spend so much of our time training people in critical thinking that it absolutely wipes them out for creative thinking. So the moment they're faced with anything, the first thing they got to say is, "Let's analyze it." And that's not the secret to good creative thinking. Let me give you a figure to jot down in your notes.
Scientifically, they have discovered that only 6% of your ideas are any good. That's max. You know what that means? You got to get more ideas to get some winners. Now, let me give you a very good illustration. They've asked you to go out now and to give a message at one of these rallies. And they want to promote it, so they're asking you for a title. Give us a grabber. Give us something that will interest. You say, oh, well, you know, I'm not very good at that. I have good messages, but I don't have very good titles. Well, you know, give us a poor one, but, we, you know, put something down, but see what you can do. You know what we'll do? We'll sit down, and this is exactly what takes place. You get out a piece of paper, you say, well, I'm not too good at this kind of stuff. Let's see what we can do. And so you'll write down a title, and then you will talk yourself in and out of that title for the next hour and a half. And it goes something like this. Well, I got something there. That's pretty tame. But on the other hand, it's all I got. Hey, wife, what do you think of this title? You don't? Well, I'd like to see you come out with a better one. I watch a guy sit for 1 hour and a half with a sad banana little title. And that's how he's wiping himself out. I said, you know what you need? You need 25 titles. And I'll bet you we'll get a winner out of them. So you've got to multiply the ideas. And that's why, by the way, in the creative process, you always need more behind the scenes than you ever display in the counter. So a guy says, good night. If I only get 6% out of this thing, what in the world am I going to do with the other 94? You throw that into your creative reservoir. That's why, as the years go by, you get better and more creative. Because you got all of this to draw from. But you see, if you don't want to work at it that hard, you know, why bother? For a common piece of silverware, to which they give a title, they come up sometimes with as many as 6,000 names to come out with one. I saw Cecil B. DeMille producing the Ten Commandments, one of the great experiences of my life. I spent an hour with him in his study. He opened up all of the library to show me the research that had gone into this room about this size, just filled with books, floor to ceiling. The time I was there, he was filming a little sequence. If you saw the film, it's the little sequence, I think it's a 32-second sequence, where after they cross the Red Sea, they're going up the other side on dry land, and there's a little cart, and the cart gets stuck, and the guys run around from behind it to push, and when they do, a little baby falls off. And DeMille's trying to get that baby to fall off the right way. When I saw it, they filmed that for the 63rd time, and he couldn't get it to come out the way he wanted. Place was loaded with all these extras and animals and everybody, you know, made up. Friday afternoon, I'll see you Monday. And I said, no. You know, it's been good night. We got to go through it again. I don't know how many more times they went. That's just for 32 seconds on a film. But you see, we're not really that serious about communicating the Word of God. I mean, we talk a good game. But who wants to work at it that hard? Unless you're DeMille. Convinced that he's communicating the most important thing in all of the world. Third. Results which are good, bad, or indifferent are welcome. You got to put the brakes on that critical component. Because when you're going to do creative thinking, you brainstorm and you write down everything that comes to you. But you see, we write something down and say, ah, yeah, that's sad. Ah, that's weak. Well, that is anemic. You know what I do when I'm working with you? I ask you to think out loud while you're putting it down. And while you're doing it, I'm blowing the whistle like crazy. You're out of bounds. That's illegitimate. And man, I tell you, if you don't think we strip the gears of a guy who's been trained at MIT, who comes to seminary to reverse his field to become a creative thinker, man, you got another thought coming. Man, that guy is just blowing his brains. But man, it's so exciting to see once you get him on the other side. And that's our greatest problem in engineering, for greatest problem in the military, greatest problem any area you go to find creative thinkers. We get all kinds of people who are critical thinkers. Man, they come a dime a dozen. The guy really come up with creative ideas. So you don't make a judgment at the outset of the process of creativity. You've got to withhold it, or you're dead in the water. Fourth, incubation generates illumination. Incubation generates illumination. I'll give you a little clue. Man, I wish somebody had given me early in the game. This is worth $10,000. We won't charge you that. It's in the price of the tuition. Let's suppose you've got a creative assignment. And let's suppose, you know, just pull an arbitrary figure. Let's suppose you got 45 minutes that you could apply in your schedule to that creative assignment. You know the best way to do it? Break it up into three periods of 15 minutes each and put time between. Now, this is the significant part, because that's when the incubation takes place. So, for instance, in Bible study, sit down, do a 15 minutes worth of observations, and then drop it and go to school. And all the way to school, you know what you're doing? Your mind's working. By the way, your mind never sleeps. It rests, but it never sleeps. And people say, well, you know, I don't come up with very much. Well, I said, that's simple. You're starving your brain, man. Feed it something. The more you feed it, the more it produces. And you've all had this experience, you just haven't identified it. You've all been working like crazy on a problem, and you go to bed. And you wake up the next morning, you got the solution. Because your mind's been working on the thing like crazy. It doesn't stop. So, for instance, the whole area of meditation that, you know, we're big in is a tremendous asset to this process. Put your ideas on your back burner. And you know what you get? You get what my wife produces when she produces a soup that I call enthusiastic soup. She throws everything she's got into it. Starts out on Saturday morning. Man, I can always tell when it's going to come. Get my finger slapped. You can't get into it till 6 o'clock at night. It takes that long to get that kind of soup. And it makes camel soup taste like dish water. You know why? It's just on a back burner, real slow flame, and it cooks all day long. You know, and this stuff just going up my nostrils, and man, I'm drooling down the front of me. Always have to have a Kleenex at hand. That's what's happening in this. Warmed up imaginations continue to perk. Fifth, it's another principle that plays into our hands. Group efforts stimulate creativity. If you've learned how to listen. And let's face it, most of us are lousy listeners. Publish it not in Gath, nor spread it abroad in Zion. All of your training is how to speak, not how to listen. By the way, it's a good thing to remind, every time you shave in the morning, just look in the mirror and remind yourself, you got 2 ears but only one mouth. Okay? That's the proportion. Just think of what would happen had God reversed that. That's why the best Bible study I ever have is not with my colleagues, because they don't listen. Neither do I. Everybody's trying to get his scholarly word in. Best I have is with my wife. Boy, we study the Bible like you wouldn't believe. She comes up with insights that blow my mind. And I can remember the first time I started to write them down. She said, Howie, what are you doing? I said, writing them down. Come on, you know this. Who's kidding home? Nobody here but us chickens. I don't know this, okay? See, but what you say is, well, yeah, wife, that's pretty good. Now, let me tell you what the Lord has to say from this passage. I can prove to you every single time that your wife will beat you hands down in the applicational process of Bible study. See, because most of you are cerebral. See, come on, this is a good concept. See, we love concepts because they're non-threatening. Never had to do a cotton-picking thing with them, but they sure sound good, don't they? Really impress people. And your wife says, well, you know, that's good, but, you know, what I want to know is how do we work this out here in the house? You know, what do you think we ought to do to change? To change? Third question. How? How can we activate creativity? I want to give you five or six ways, and there are many more, but let's get started with these. Number one is experience. Experience provides fuel for ideation. That's why you need to travel more. Like Staubach always says when he gives an announcement. Now let me repeat the announcement for the benefit of the linemen. This is a football. See, we get such screwy priorities. You know what I happen to believe? I happen to believe you ought to sell your shirt. You ought to do everything you can. You really don't need all of the collection of junk you got under one mortgage. You ought to put more of your money in travel and take your kids with you. Man, it's a tremendously broadening experience. By the way, that's why missionaries' kids come out so high, often on the creative list. A lot of these kids have had international exposure like you wouldn't believe. See, most of us are provincial. You know, it's me and my little city, and this is where God's working. And it never occurs to you that God could work any place other than where you're working. You know, how in the world could he be working over this Episcopal church? You know, man alive, they don't know straight up. Any amazing things, it blows your mind God's doing down at that place. If you just get into it and find, you know, there's some people who are instructing the pastor in our community on how to study the Bible for himself. He thought that was a good idea. This group of people in the church are teaching him how to study the Bible. He said, you wouldn't believe what's happening to the guy's messages. Taught him how to present the gospel. First time he got up to present it, 27 people responded in the Episcopalian church. You know, but how could that be happening? You know, when I'm a four-square Episcopalian Unigational Synod South of God man. Personal context. Never occurred to you that everybody you meet is an acre of ground into which God wants you to plant something or from which he wants you to reap something. But I'll tell you where you get wiped out, just where I get wiped out, especially if you're an educated person. That's enough to kill any learning. Put a guy in school long enough. You know what I'm doing now systematically? I am spending more time with non-educated people. I just show up in a job every now and then, you know, oh boy, it's down there, you know. And I sit down and have lunch with them and just find out what they talk about. Because that's where most people are. And we are ministering to the thinnest slice of humanity. And the bulk of the people are going to hell on a skateboard. And I come to the Gospels and discover that these were the people with whom Jesus Christ identified. Because it's easy to get, you know, so far removed from these people that, you know, you're insulated in terms of communication. Say nothing of isolated. My father taught me a great principle at this point. He said, son, every time you get around a significant person, keep your mouth shut, except to ask questions. You ever watch that getting on a plane? I love to get on a plane, sit down next to a guy, and just pump him with a couple questions, get him started. Very interesting. It's almost a humorous experience. Guy will get up at the end of that thing, having talked the whole way from Boston to Dallas, saying, "Man, I sure enjoyed this. This was an exciting experience." And I'm the guy that made off with the goodies. But you see, if you are highly impressed with yourself, then you are lowly impressed with anybody else. So why listen to them? What's this guy got to teach you? You're the disciple maker. Second, problem solving. Kettering called it the characteristic of systematically challenging the obvious. And by the way, in games, in puzzles, in the problems of life, you get the greatest opportunity to use the problem-solving method. And we could give each of you a test to write down the problem-solving process and drop you out on a volleyball court, and you don't know a blessed thing. Cognitively, see, that's what we test in seminary. We see how much a guy can cram in his mind. I had to communicate with a guy some time ago. He was on his way to an examination, kind of walking, you know, like this. And I came up to him. He said, "Don't touch me, Prof. I'll leak everything I know." Then he goes in, boy, you know, we give him an A. He's a scholar. Give him the same test 3 days later. He couldn't work his way out of a wet paper bag. Send him out into a local church, and what does he do? Blow the whole thing apart. First 2 weeks on the scene. You know, I mean, you have to be gifted to do that. Because he's never learned to tackle his problems. And by the way, can I give you a little insight? Some of you guys I know are in the process of struggling. Some of you guys are really having your cages rattled. You know why? Because you're really coming to learn about yourself. And very few of us know about ourselves. And that's the greatest barrier to growth. See, I got a short fuse. Well, don't ream yourself out on that. That's a tremendous advantage. I would to God that I could give some guys a little fuse. They're the kind of guys you can drop a bomb beside. And they say, "Did you say something?" See, they're not going to move with anything. So I say, "Man, you got some drive. You got a temper." That's why I love David. How do you think he got fouled up with Bathsheba? He's supposed to be out in a battle. He's home looking over the scene. These guys, "Well, you know, that's not my problem, Prof." I said, "Well, you got another problem then." But I dare you to find a guy in the scriptures that had the creative genius that David did. See, it's just a question of getting your drive going in the right direction. You know, harnessing that thing. Here's a third way to develop it. Hobbies. And the fine arts. Now, I know you have been reared on rock music and, you know, half a dozen other profound things, particularly in the evangelical community. You've been singing "Mary Had a Little Lamb," you know, for so long. We take abominable theology and set it to more abominable music and can't figure out why most people don't know schmatz about the truth of God. Just listen to what we sing. So I take students and I take them to the symphony with me. I get a couple of extra tickets. Somebody usually is dropping them on me. We're dropping them now in a seminary in droves. They can't get anybody to come. They're glad to pay for it. Nobody wants to show up. So we get up in chapel and announce, "You'd like to go to the symphony? We'll give you tickets. Take your wife." See, the average guy falls asleep in this because he doesn't know what in the world to listen for. So he says, "Well, you know, I really didn't turn me on." I said, "Well, you know what? That's a greater commentary on you than it is on Beethoven." What the reason is, the guy's never been exposed. He doesn't know what to listen for, you know. Not loud enough. Thwart. Oh, this is a terrific one. Reading. Creativity thrives on reading. Reading makes a full man. But there's one key to reading. It cannot be passive. Now, if you've had any schooling, you become a passive reader. Because somebody told you had to read 1,000 pages, So man, you turn the pages. And when you get tired of that, you turn on the fan. You know. And that turned the pages. I have now read 1,000 pages. No, you haven't. And I'll give you one clue. Apply it to your Bible study. I dare you to test your commitment level. Read one paragraph of Scripture, close your Bible, and tell your wife what you read. Tell a friend what you read. If you can't tell them, you haven't read. So you go back and you read it again. Try it again. I've had guys go through 10, 15 times. I'm talking about top-notch graduates of universities. Because they never learn to read. And by the way, that's how I tell if I've got a book, good book, how long it takes me to get through. Because I know how fast I read, and I can read like it's going out of style. If you're just talking about covering pages. And even comprehending the material. The question is, does the guy give you something, and does that explode in your mind, so you make the next 3 hours thinking through that idea? That's a good book. And by the way, don't read everything. Everybody comes down the pike with all this stuff. We tend to think because it's in print, it's good. There's more junk per square inch in print. We ought to use it in camping to start fires. Make a greater contribution. I read selective reading material. I read, for example, Saturday Review of Literature. That's about as liberal as you can get. I read the Atlantic Monthly. That's about as far out as you can get. It's also the best journalism. See, what we tend to do is to read the stuff with which we agree. So what does that do? Reinforces your prejudices. See, that tells me what the scene is like. I don't buy their analysis in terms of answers, but boy, it's real input in terms of what's going on out there. I know what's going on. They'll tell you what's going on. Because they don't play game. They just tell it like it is. So I love to read that. Then, I rely very heavily on close friends. So whenever I get around some of my friends, like Stedman, Sanny, somebody, what are you reading, man? Because see, if you give me a reference that here is a book that is good and it's good for the following reasons, that's better than a review. Fifth, here's one I want to get you guys started on. Some of you, I think, have already started. Wish my wife were here to give you more input on it. Writing. You guys keep a journal? That's what I would suggest you do. Keep a journal. You want a good sample? Read my friend Jim Elliott's journal. He was my little brother at Wheaton College. You know, I read that stuff, I can't believe a guy can come up with that stuff. You know why? As a freshman, Jim was thinking way beyond most of the faculty. There's no guy that would just sit down like this, you know, and take a verse of Scripture or take a concept and just think, and he'd write. He'd write. Ever occur to you that most of that stuff has never been edited? That's straight out of his journal. But he told me one day, it started when he was a little boy, and his father said, "Son, every day before you go to bed, I want you to write a sheet of paper." And he'd read it. He'd encourage him. "Oh, son, that's fantastic. You're really thinking, buddy." And he'd ask him a couple questions, and that'd stretch him a little more, and he'd go back to the thing. See, writing is a very exact thing. And the guy who says, "Well, you know, I understand it. I just can't write it down." I got news for you. You don't understand it. Just take it by faith if you can't take it any other way. When you write it down, you know whether you really understand it. And I hope you got a notebook, what I call an idea trap. You see, as you're going around, you pick up quotations, you pick up illustrations. You know the guy that taught me this? Barnhouse. I told him one day, "Doc, I like to learn how to illustrate." I don't know of anybody, by the way, in the evangelical scene in recent years, who could illustrate like Donald Gray Barnhouse. It's worth reading his books just for his illustrations. And I said, "Doc, I'd really like to learn this." He said, "No, you wouldn't." I said, "Yeah, I would." "Uh-uh." "Yeah, I'm serious." "Nah, you're not willing to pay the price." I said, "Try me." He said, "Okay, there's my desk. I'm leaving. I'll be back in an hour. Take anything on that desk, nothing off of it, and come up with an illustration." Great, good, boy. You know, I pick up a pencil, I look at a pencil, that's a pencil. There's a pencil, got a top and a bottom, that's, you know, a pencil. And I go all the way to the thing, an hour he come back later, I have his little, measly, sad banana dragging illustration. And he'd pick up the pencil, and then he'd show me how to illustrate a doctrinal truth with it. So that's what I mean. Pick up the scissors and show me, look, you can never have scissors unless you have two parts. It's the balance between the sovereignty of God and the free will of man. See, it's this kind of stuff, you know, that you're constantly coming across. Things are happening to you. By the way, you guys who've got kids ought to be writing like crazy. Your kids are giving you the best illustrations you will ever get on planet Earth if you keep your ears open. And the kid runs in and says, hey, Daddy, guess what I taught? See, and boy, he gives you a little quotation, a man is a zinger. You know why? Because that's where people live. See, the best illustrations are with people and with animals. Six. Last, spending time with creative people. That's what I love about a few days like this up here. Man, I come up here and I get all my circuits blown. Picking up more ideas, talking with guys like you, asking penetrating questions. It's why if I were a guy in any area involved in the process of discipleship, I'd be constantly developing a little think tank. Where we just get together periodically to do nothing but think. Think creatively. Think wild. Think adversely. Think on the opposite side. When I was a student at the seminary, there was a guy in my class by the name of Ray Steadman that you may have heard of. Ray and I were the closest of friends. We developed what we call pecan theology. There's a large pecan tree on the campus. We used to sit under that thing till 3:30 in the morning discussing theology. You know what we'd do? He'd take a position and I'd take the opposite position. And then we'd have at it. Then we'd switch sides. Do you know why you think your arguments are so good? I'll tell you, you've never tested them with somebody who's diametrically opposed to yours. What I love to do with an AF, drop them loose on a couple of our students who will go for your jugular vein. Who think discipleship is from off the wall. And it'll rattle your cage and you'll come out thinking, man, I better go back to the drawing board. See, isn't that you're wrong. It's just that you don't know where you're weak. And it doesn't get exposed till you get in a group situation where you get somebody who can think as well as you can. That's why... And I should have mentioned this in connection with convictions. Most of us don't have convictions. We simply have prejudices. And we rearrange our prejudices. That's about as creative as we get. And that's why we don't like people in an organization. We don't like people in a group who ask those nasty questions, who disagree. We like the conformist. I often ask the Sunday school teacher, which pupil do you like? I like the little girl with the long curls that sits there and looks and smiles and never says anything. I say, right. 22 years later, she never says anything. But watch the kid that's climbing the sides of the walls. See, watch the kid that's taking the place apart. You know what I've discovered over the years at Wheaton, Dallas, other Christian institutions? It's the hellraisers who are making an impact for Jesus Christ today. And these dear, pious Petes that come down the line, you know, are the guys, boy, if you're not going to the mission field, you're out of it. And what are they doing today? Pushing a broom. And it was some guy tearing the campus apart. I think of one of my classmates. They threw him out so many times he set a track record for getting tossed out of Wheaton College. Probably the greatest living missionary in the contemporary scene. Really burning it up. Well, that'll get you started on something.
Thank you for allowing us the privilege of ministering to you by way of this cassette. You can multiply this ministry by sharing this cassette with someone else.